We have two mining permits. And obviously, this is extremely valuable to have anywhere in the world. And the reason for that is because of the past production. There's past production from the high-grade underground veins. There's also an historical production from the Taurus East mine, which is kind of an extension, we believe, of the Taurus deposit itself. 35,000 ounces were produced there. So we have, in the south on the underground veins, a 20 square kilometer mine permit that covers the mill, two tailings facilities, and all the four vein systems and most of the infrastructure that supported it. And in the northern part of our park, which is mostly bulk tonnage, and in the area where we have the Taurus deposit, we have a 1.2 square kilometer mine permit that covers most of the Taurus deposit. Kind of, it's already bleeding out a bit to the west, but also it has more than enough ground to continue to expand mineralization to the east, and that puts us in a very unique position.
Marco Rock, Cassier Gould, good morning to you. How are you?
I'm good, Andy. How about you?
Doing well. So you're not in North America right now. You're over in Europe. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Awesome. Well, it's a really balmy 32 degrees right in Atlanta right now. So I'm sure you're missing out.
Yeah, I am, by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about you and your background here. That's what I want to talk about first. You had a hard money background. Tell me about that. What got you interested in mining?
Well, the path, I guess, goes back a long time ago. I started my career in banking. Throughout my studies, I was always very interested in business and finance. In my teens, I would religiously read Financial Times, Bloomberg every day. I got into banking. I studied business and finance. I got into banking. And I was in the banking world in the crazy days, pre-2008. And I guess kind of my real interest for gold started at a point when I saw the bailouts, from several industries, including banking. I was just scratching my head onto why that made any sense. I had a lot of my good friends and even industry people, meaning banking, telling me how important it was to bail out everyone. And I was just, couldn't make sense of it because, in the good times, when the profits were flowing and the money was flowing, everyone was happy to, take and keep what it's theirs and their profits. But then, when things went bad, call the taxpayer for the bailout. So I got into a deep dive into, kind of finance and banking and monetary system and monetary history and banking history, et cetera. And I quickly realized I did not own enough precious metals, in particular gold. So I, back in 2007, 2008, started investing in gold and later in silver, got acquainted with Bitcoin back in 2009. And, Kind of fast forward a little bit. I did my MBA between Hong Kong UST and London Business School, and I moved to Hong Kong, and basically together with a couple of MBA classmates, set up an advisory business focused on precious metals, and an immersion bank, and then became a kind of a mining entrepreneur as I realized, I guess, over the process, how attractive theoretically, like the operational leverage that producers or, gold producers or silver producers have to the metal, and then eventually kind of going into the rabbit hole of seeing, where these projects come from and the huge gains and profits that could be made by, finding and developing and putting in production some of these projects. Of course, the earlier stage you go, the further down the rabbit hole you go, the bigger the potential profits, and had a lot of successes with that. Obviously, a lot of failures as well. I made a lot of money, lost a lot of money, but that's kind of my journey into kind of hard money and into the rabbit hole of mining and eventually to like exploration and development.
You know, it's interesting. A lot of the people I talk to have a background in geology, but you don't. You have a background in finance, which actually I prefer. And the reason I prefer that, because you see this as a business as opposed to the science of it. Not to diminish the science, because at the end of the day, it's all about the gold and how much you have in the grade, right? But I think that's where a lot of mining companies fall short, really, is in the capital markets. But and you're a hard asset or a gold advocate, correct me if I'm wrong.
I'm both, really. I'm not a fundamentalist on gold. I like gold, I like silver. I think there's a lot of merits to Bitcoin, for example. I think there's a lot of caveats there as well. I think real estate makes sense, a lot of sense actually. Just hard assets as opposed to like a debt-fueled economy, which is what we've been living since 2008, which is creating a bit of an illusion. And I think it's going to end up in tears for a lot of people in a lot of places around the world, given kind of the debt binge that we've been living since, I guess, in the last 16 years.
Tell me a little bit about what brought you to Canada and how you end up doing mine in Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess, in this process that I was telling you about, kind of going down the rabbit hole, I started looking into the attractiveness of the producers. I remember back in 2011, 12, 13, the margins were really thin, all in sustaining costs, like hovering just under $1,000 an ounce, with the price not too far away from it after kind of that 2011, 13 crash, in the gold price. I started looking, my journey was kind of very like one step at a time. I was, my first focus was really looking into, like the safest of all kind of potential projects. So always looking for the highest grade, no matter what, because then you'll have always that kind of protection. So I started investing in a few companies, both in the silver and gold space, that were, developing, quite exciting projects which at the time I see with limited downside. So, I was looking at companies like Pretium Resources, or which is basically a gold explorer. It's now a producing mine in British Columbia in Canada. Looking at, Max Silver, one of the highest, now it's also producing as well, silver project in the world in Mexico. Another company, the Skeena Resources, also in British Columbia, also not too far away from our projects. I guess throughout the process made, quite a bit of money investing in those and kind of understanding the projects, quite in depth as well. And kind of, not only with those projects, but many others, kind of looking at things that work, that don't work, to your comment as well. Some companies that are run by geologists have kind of a different behavior than maybe some companies that are more run by business people. And this is not to discredit any geologists, because they are like the most fundamental part of this business. They do have a different mindset, and geologists are very interested in geology and sometimes forget a little bit about the math that is required and kind of the business sense that it required to actually run and advance a business to be a financial success, which is what everyone wants at the end of the day.
Yeah. And I want to go back to that team of the geologists that you have, but that he had a very integral part of you getting this property and this project. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's right. I guess kind of fast forwards to 2020, I guess kind of in the 2010s decade, spent a lot of time in the business, ended up meeting and getting a lot of projects, a lot of CEOs, a lot of companies, saw the ups and downs, difficulties in kind of raising capital, investing the project, but also at the same time, the gains that could be made in kind of embedding in the right project, and go through the very I guess volatile, but also almost schizophrenic behavior of valuations in the space. So, you know, when you like understand something deeply and understand kind of, you know, the industry is full of risks, but also has a lot of potential. So kind of understanding the risks well of the projects and kind of getting to know some of the top geologists, I got to meet, one was Dr. Peter McGaugh with Max Silver Project. The other one was Doug Kerwin. Dealt with him quite a bit, and we developed quite a close relationship with Doug Kerwin. He ended up being kind of the big kind of igniter, or like the big reason I jumped into this project, because you know, I've been working with Doug and sending them you know, dozens and, you know, even hundreds of projects. And these, some of these projects, or actually all of these projects, always had a problem. Doug was quite, I would say, demanding, always finding some sort of flaw, you know, not big enough or too high altitude or not enough potential or the grade isn't there or it's too small. There was something, there was, or, you know, or too hard or the jurisdiction doesn't work. You know, there's a long list of risks for any mining project. And then, you know, at the time I was kind of showing this project, which I was involved as an investor, as a shareholder, what is now Cassiar Gold. And after, you know, receiving all that negative feedback from so many projects I've checked over the years, Doug Kerwin, which, you know, had in the past been the VP for Ivanhoe, is sad that actually this looked really good. At the time we had basically a 1 million ounce resource. We had mine permits, infrastructure, access, a big land package. And I was wondering, you know, like, what's the potential here? And he said, this is back in 2020, meaning over 62,000 meters of drilling ago. And he said, well, I can easily see 3 to 5 million ounces here. And by the way, this looks like a lot like Fosterville did 100 years ago. And, you know, I was happy with the 3 to 5 million ounce potential because I knew that was, you know, that would be enough to make a kind of a tier one discovery at the time, or to find a tier one project. And then when you compare this asset to the Fosterville district, which is the lowest cost producer in the world at the time, and, you know, a massive district that's yielded almost 100 million ounces. I was thinking, you know, Doug compared the, you know, this, you know, this district to the Fosterville district, and yes, you know, knowing the size potential and basically the cost potential of the Fosterville district, you know, it was just too hard to say no, and I decided to jump on board. And you know, I've been seeing a lot of projects come and go, you know, a lot of companies, management teams, and I realize it will be extremely hard to find anything that, you know, came close to something like this. And to be honest, and to Doug's credit, it's been really delivering on everything we've hoped for this district. And, you know, it's much easier to speak now after 62,000 meters of drilling with the kind of hit ratio we've been having. But I guess, you know, I owe, and I think the company and everyone that you know, is involved and benefits from the development and the advancement of these assets to Doug's, you know, basically assessment and belief in this project in this district.
Okay, so there is a lot going on there. What I'd really like to do is hammer down what you have, but also there is this business tension, and it's a good tension between you and Doug's. Him telling you no, and then him finally telling you yes. So let's first start with him telling you yes. Now, where are you at with the project? And then let's talk about what you have, that you know that you have, and what you potentially have.
Yeah. So I guess, you know, going back to that, so I guess, you know, at the time we had a 1 million ounce resource, mine permits, great access, great infrastructure, because it's a past producing district. We have past producing mines. So that's the reason we have all that infrastructure. We increased our resource by 40% to 1.4 million ounces. And, you know, basically in 2022, 2023, and 2024, we drilled and accumulated over, in addition to the drilling from the first couple of years, we drilled an additional 46,000 meters of drilling, and you know, with a very high hit ratio. You know, out of you know, over 200 drill holes, we only missed a couple of them. So it's and you know, really focused on expansion, keep on finding more consistent mineralization, similar grades what we were seeing before, similar styles of mineralization, similar styles of alteration, similar characteristics in mineralization. And this is, you know, a very large land package, 590 square kilometers. We only basically touched on a very, very small footprint of the project in terms of drilling, and as well as, you know, mapping or sampling or geophysics. So it's really living up to the expectation. And in fact, I'm getting much more bullish than what Doug was to the ultimate potential of this project. But it's, you know, it's very easy to say after 4.5 years on top of the project and the drilling and you know, like good geologists need to be also like slightly conservative. You know, you want to have a good balance. Some of them are extremely bullish and they like everything. Some of them are extremely conservative and find a negative on every single project. So, you know, I guess it's really experience and seeing, you know, what success looks like and being successful that really puts you in a position to, you know, separate the really good ones from the potentially good ones.
Yeah, exactly. So if I heard, you know, that's all I hear is great success is coming, that sort of thing. So it's good to have a good geologist to keep you grounded. Let me ask you this now, though. This is what I really want to know is, what do you have now with drilling? If you can just say that again and then work that out. I don't know if you want to go to potentially, because that might be, you might not be able to say that, but what do you have now known that's in the ground?
Well, the only thing I can talk about is our resource from early 2022. So that's 1.4 million ounces at 1.14 grams per ton inferred. That deposit is right at surface, is outcropping, which is very rare to see these days. The overburden on the deposit is over, you know, on average 10 meters. 90% of the 1.4 million ounces we have from early 2022 are within 150 meters from surface. That deposit is open laterally, is open at depth, and we've been expanding that as well as open internal to the pit shell, which we've also been expanding mineralization there as well. So, you know, I cannot tell you how many ounces we think we have right now. We think we have more. We've drilled over 46,000 meters with a very high hit ratio, as I mentioned. You know, almost 100%. And the focus has been really expanding mineralization. We're not trying to upgrade to the resource confidence. We really want, you know, our objective really is to prove up the potential that we believe we have in this project, which is a tier one potential. And that means 5 million ounce plus, which basically would put us on the radar for every single gold producer on the planet. You know, the indications are really good. If you look at the drill results, you know, intercepting mineralization from surface in many, many cases. With, you know, the more we drill, the more we find. And yeah, it's, I think it's a really good setup. But at the same time, just to give you a sense, the Torres deposit, where we have the 1.4 million ounces, sits on 1 square kilometer footprint. And the size
you
of our land.
590, correct?
Correct, 590 square kilometers. So, you know, it's... there's a lot of potential to keep, but you know, not that necessarily everything is prospective, but the truth is at the same time, we really haven't sterilized any part of the property, which is also a good place to be. So it's, the indications are really good. It's an interesting project in the sense that a lot of people, because we have the infrastructure, the access, the mill, the mine permits, people tend to look at it as, oh, this is kind of a near-term development opportunity, which it also is potentially. In terms of the exploration potential, the exploration work in this district, in this land package, we really only scratch the surface here. There's a lot of room to continue to explore laterally across our vast land package, as well as the depth, because the average drilling in a you know last you know few you know the five season of drilling, it's been you know on average 300 meters, 350 meters deep, and you see a lot of deposits these days that are you know go down to 500, 1,000 meters, even 2,000 meters sometimes. So you know we're very far away from you know doing a proper job at assessing the ultimate potential of this, and you know maybe one day the Fosterville comparison would make sense, but you know it's that's the blue sky potential that will take a long time to prove.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your jurisdiction, where you're at. You're out of BC. Where exactly in BC?
Yeah, so we're in northern British Columbia. So we're north of the Golden Triangle. You know, most people know the Golden Triangle quite well because of, you know, Pretium or the Brucejack Mine or Seedy Bridge or Skeena or the Red Chris Mine. So, like, we are our own district, the Cassiar Gold District. We are 200 kilometers north of the Red Chris Mine that typically marks the northern end of the Golden Triangle. And that's along Highway 37, which is the main highway that connects British Columbia into the Yukon. So that is Highway 37, bisects our property. And we're roughly 100 kilometers south of the Yukon-BC border. So, you know, it's relatively north in British Columbia, but, you know, which... and I guess one thing that is probably also worthwhile mentioning, and that's actually probably... almost can see here in the backgrounds, you can see actually here our mill and a couple of our tailings facilities. It's like very, very flat grounds, especially when we compare that with some of the Yukon projects or properties or British Columbia properties. You know, a lot of them are in rugged terrain, or in the Golden Triangle specifically, a lot of them are, you know, within glacier areas or with heavy snowfall. So we're, you know, kind of a really idyllic scenario, although, you know, relatively far north because northern BC is, you know, at least in my book, you know, I'm Portuguese born and raised. So, you know, anything north of the Great Lakes is pretty far north. But it's actually a really idyllic scenario in terms of weather, in terms of topography, and also in terms of kind of, you know, we have a lot of flat, you know, areas. There, you know, there's room for not only multiple pits, but also multiple tailings facilities, et cetera, that obviously can be quite valuable and important in the mining scenario as well.
Got it. And I think you already answered this, but this is going to be an open pit mine. It's not going to be below ground, correct?
The Torres deposit is a pit constrained, open billable deposit, you know, something that is so close to surface, actually outcropping. And, you know, when you look at the current shape of the Torres deposit, it's almost like a kind of inverted pyramid where 90% of the ounces are within 150 meters from surface. Now, we're finding a bunch of satellite targets that look also to be open billable. But in addition to that, that's worthwhile mentioning, four of our five past producing mines are clearly underground scenario. These are kind of sheer vein systems, 3 meter wide on average, although these veins typically the pinch and swell. The historical production was there was 315,000 ounces. This is in the southern part of our property. This is the material that this mill right here processed. This is in the southern part of our property is also an area where we have most of the 25 kilometers of underground workings that takes us straight into the vein systems that are, and especially the end mine sections. We have power lines, there's also a big mine permit there. We have a 20 square kilometer mine permit at the Cassiar South part of our property. And all of these vein systems are open for expansion along strike and down dip, and there's a lot of room for parallel and stacked vein systems. So it's most of our focus, and I would say maybe 60 to 70% of our effort resources have been focused into the bulk tonnage, because that's where we feel we can build tonnage in ounces faster, which is what the majors will ultimately want. But we have a significant potential on a high grade. But because they're skinnier and kind of harder to define, although, you know, they have a good width on average, 3 meters is not too bad. It's actually pretty good. Despite that, it's actually harder to build ounces because when you're drilling on the bulk tonnage, you're typically hitting, in many cases, from surface. And you can, you know, there's less meters kind of wasted not hitting what you want to hit. Although, of course, when you hit the high grade, it's very high grade and it's very juicy and it will be, you know, obviously higher margin or theoretically much higher margin ounces than the bulk tonnage. But at the same time, we would just want to build our scale and the critical size that, you know, doesn't remove any potential acquire from the equation as we build this district and kind of build our resource inventory as we drill and continue to explore.
Yeah, got it. Okay. That's actually very impressive because somebody that's been doing this for a while, getting permitted can take years. So, but let's talk a little bit about money that you have in the share structure, money you have in the bank. How much money do you have in the bank? And do you plan on starting to produce? Are you going to just expand the project with that money? What's the plan?
Yeah, no, we have around $5 million in the bank. We could potentially put this into production ourselves, given how blessed we are in terms of the permitting situation, the topography, the infrastructure, the access. It's all of these things really lower the barrier to entry because you're not going to have to spend hundreds or even billions of dollars in developing that infrastructure, which is the case for, you know, a lot of exciting projects that are, you know, despite being geologically very exciting, they're very far away from civilization, very far away from infrastructure. So that really puts us, in a really unique position as a company. But our goal and our strategy really is to, despite having all of these pieces already in place, the key for us to unlock most of the value is through exploration, through expansion, through proving a much bigger system. Because right now we have 1.4 million ounces, which is great. Yeah, it's a big, it's a big resource endowment. But you know, when you look at the footprint of 1 square kilometer for that deposit and the sheer size of our land package, 590 square kilometers, you know, there's a lot of room to grow. And of course, you know, size is could be meaningless in the sense that, you know, I could tell you have 1,000 square kilometers or 10,000 square kilometers. Is really how perspective that is, that the quality of that land package and prospectivity. We are within a 15-kilometer trend. Canada is part of the BC's Inland Orogenic Gold Belt. It's part of Cisco Developments Caribou Barkerville District, which is also kind of a belt where we have our secondary project in center BC. And we have a 15-kilometer trend that is north-south, on which we have, you know, a lot of gas production, and a lot of gold showings at surface, a lot of gold in drilling. You know, it's maybe 15 kilometer north-south, maybe roughly 10 kilometer east-west. You know, so that accounts for about 150 square kilometers of highly prospective footprint. Not to say that what's outside and within the 590 square kilometer is not. It's just that we don't have enough information. You know, most of it we haven't actually put boots on the ground. And, you know, even 150 square kilometers is the, you know, it's a tall order for anyone to properly explore. The potential is there and we're really blessed to have that. We know that part is quite prospective, but, you know, also takes time and effort and work, and resources to expand it. But we believe that's how we generate the most value for our shareholders. I think we're quite undervalued as it is right now. But that's really the focus. Now, in terms of a development scenario, kind of, I don't know if you were asking that as well or not. We could potentially develop this ourselves. Very, very few projects, again, have the permits, have the infrastructure, have the access, have the mill, have the power, or even have an experienced explorer that has done it before in a junior mining space. So I think we have a lot of ingredients to potentially put this into production ourselves. But, you know, obviously, when you look at historical transactions that, you know, meteors or majors of buyer acquire their projects, you know, and they can be anywhere between, you know, $100, $150, $200, $300, $400 an ounce on the ground. And when you measure that against kind of the risk and the time and the effort it takes also to develop something, we believe that, you know, an exit scenario by M&A could be a way to generate the highest amount of return at the lowest, you know, in the shortest amount of time. But, you know, we have to put all in the balance. And as we go forward and, you know, interest comes along, you know, to properly assess every single scenario. But, you know, having that kind of dual optionality of, you know, progressing the project ourselves, eventually, ultimately even to production, or potentially waiting for an offer for mid-tier or major, you know, it's, I think it's really the ideal scenario, and very few companies have that potential to, you know, just because of all this context of where we are between, you know, the permits, the infrastructure, et cetera, that puts us in a very unique position.
Yeah, I would agree. It's very interesting. Share structure and your share price. What are you currently trading at? And then tell me about how many shares do you have outstanding, fully diluted?
Yeah, sure. So we have 127 million shares outstanding. So our I think share price as of late last week, we're like 21 and a half, 22 cents.
Maybe. So, right.
Yeah. So that's, you know, roughly 26, 27 million Canadian market cap.
You know, okay.
The EV is just slightly over 20 million Canadian. You know, the Canadian dollar is relatively weak against the US dollar in the last few weeks. Fully diluted, that's 178 million shares. Our lowest price warrant is at 50 cents. Our highest price warrant is at 70 cents. The warrant exercise could bring, you know, $20 million, over $20 million into the treasury if they are all exercised. They all expire within the next year and a half. Insider ownership is roughly 12-13%. Institutional shareholder base is just under 30%. We've been able to attract, you know, a lot of high quality institutional shareholders in the past 4.5 years, from basically zero to where we are right now. And we also have good, kind of good analyst newsletter coverage as well. Yeah, that's kind of.
Yeah, I got it. So you're about 43% in strong hands is what I call it. Okay. Excellent. Well, give me your ticker symbol and then how can people find you and where you trade at? I believe you're over the counter as well as in Toronto.
Give me a website. Yeah. So our ticker symbol in TSXV is a GLDC. We also trade in the United States on the OTCQX. Our ticker there is CGLCF. We're also traded in Frankfurt, in Germany, in Europe. Our website is castiargold.com. So that's CASSIARGold.com. You can also find me, like, if you have any questions on the reach out, you know, want to know more about the project, you can, you know, find me directly on my email, Marco, M-A-R-C-O at CASSIARGold.com. That's two S's, IARGold.com.
Got it. I will put all of this in the show notes, and to all of our listeners out there, I am not an investor yet. I more than likely will be. That is a full disclosure. As well as Cassiar Gold did not pay for this. We did it on our own, meeting Marco and myself, did it on my own accord. This was a great project that I wanted to highlight. So, Marco, anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
No, I think, first of all, just thank you for taking the time, everyone, for listening. I think, you know, the junior gold mining space is, you know, quite undervalued. There's a lot of opportunity. Do your own research, analyze things deeply. There's a lot of opportunity in this space. We're not the only ones, but in a space, actually, there's a lot of good companies undervalued, but we're very, very undervalued. And if you have any questions, don't hesitate. I'm more than happy to showcase the opportunity that the Cassiar Gold story represents. And I think in this macro and global context, it's a great way to protect yourself and your financial future and the future of your loved ones. So it's not without risks, but there's a lot of opportunity here. So, if anyone wants to reach out, I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Marco, and really appreciate you coming on board.
Thank you, Andy.